Before we start the show, I'd like to talk to you about Brandwatch, which is a digital consumer intelligence company. It helps businesses better understand their consumers and buyers with clever software that enables them to analyze conversations from across the web and social media. To find out more, visit brandwatch.com and you can sign up for up-to-the-minute consumer insights in your inbox each week at brandwatch.com/bulletin. And it's worth mentioning that my business, Automated Creative, uses Brandwatch every single day, and our business would be impossible to deliver without it. So it's of real pride that I welcome them as partners for this week's episode. Hello and welcome to the Shiny New Object Podcast. My name is Tom Ollerton. I'm the founder of Automated Creative, and this is a weekly podcast where I interview the leaders of this industry about their vision for the future of that industry. And it's my pleasure and privilege to welcome Roy Wenzel, who is Head of E-Commerce Middle East Interim at Puma Group. Roy, thanks so much for joining the call. Could you give the audience a bit of an overview about who you are and what you do?
Hey, Tom. Sure. Current position is sort of the head of e-commerce for the Middle East, but I'll sort of take you a little bit further back. I've been in sort of e-commerce for over 17 years. It started out for me I was working part-time in a bicycle shop in London, and the owner wanted to kind of get into this whole web thing. And he said, "You look like a smart guy." He helped me out, and that's how I fell into e-commerce a long time ago, and just kind of started figuring stuff out for myself and kind of building that sort of knowledge. We built a website that was well known in and around London, especially the bike shops in London. And then I kind of went off and did a sort of project management for startups, for new businesses that wanted to kind of move to e-commerce platforms. And if you didn't have anything before, might have just been mom and pop stores where they wanted a website for the first time. So I did that for a bit. And then I got a call one day from Cycle Surgery, a bike shop in London. They wanted me to sort of interview and take them for e-com because they knew I worked for the previous bike shop. I ended up working for them for a long period of time. In those days, we did everything from the marketing to the content to the Google AdWords to everything. You had to kind of do everything yourself. So a lot of my e-com knowledge sort of comes from, you know, hands-on. I worked for them for a bit of time. Then I went to a very niche bicycle shop in London that was sort of your hipster fixie kind of fixed gear trend. And after that, I moved into B2B e-commerce, where I was sort of content merchandising manager for one of the bigger groups out there as I was trying to progress my career to kind of expand upon those horizons. And all of that sort of brought me to Puma. And that's about 7 years ago. My role for the Puma group has been the D2C e-commerce, starting up new e-commerce regions and countries for Puma, where the brand would actually then fulfill to the end consumer. That's sort of taken me everywhere from Latin America, which is Chile, Brazil, South Africa, Turkey, over in EMEA, and then all the way sort of Far East to Korea, Taiwan, Hong Kong, rebuilt India. So I think I've got a good global footprint sort of behind me, which also brought me then to the Middle East and Dubai, where I've sort of acting head of e-com as we spool that region up for Puma, starting in the UAE and then sort of expanding into Saudi early next year.
And we were introduced by the Future Conference, of course.
Yes, we were. I'll be speaking at the Future Conference in Abu Dhabi as well, representing sort of what it's like to spool up e-commerce in the region.
So yeah, if you guys go to futurefutr.today, you'll be able to see more details about Roy's talk. So Roy, let's get to it. You have got a very demanding job making e-commerce happen in all of these different markets. The tech stack that you must deal with must be intense, and there must be thousands of players looking to disrupt that constantly. So I figure that you want to stay ahead and not get left behind, but there's only so many hours in the day. So what happens when you get overwhelmed? How do you recenter yourself?
I switch everything off. I've got multiple channels to sort of reach out to me. So you've got your traditional email. We use Slack for any externals at Puma. And then for internal, we use Teams. Some of the teams also reach out to me on WhatsApp. I switch everything off, close all of the applications, and go old school by taking a pen and paper and sitting down and creating a list. With that list, I sort of then look at it and go, what's actually important? What can I live without? And then reprioritize the list and just keep working on it till I go, okay, this is my first step. This is what I need to do next. This is the follow on and so forth. That's how I tend to recenter myself.
And what about all of the important stuff that didn't make it into the top of the list that still needs to get done? And you know, you're going to get heat a little bit further down the line if you haven't done those things. How do you deal with the other stuff that wouldn't have been on your long list anyway if they weren't important?
It's truly about prioritization. Everything is important until you actually look at what needs to get done. So for me, it's truly what is urgent, what is important, and what can I not go on about? What is noise that can exist for another day or two or another hour? I'm not saying forget about those items. They're still on the list, but they're further down. But it's always about prioritization. What needs addressing now? What can wait? Or what can follow? And that to me becomes super important, is that prioritization. Because if everything's important, nothing gets done and you continue to kind of spin and overwhelm yourself. And you don't actually have that first step to kind of take that first step in any direction to just get items done. So I'm a big fan and preacher of you need to prioritize and identify what is immediate, what can wait, and then what is a few long-term plan. But again, keep the list going and never forget about it, you know, else you won't actually get items done. And of course, again, that continual reprioritization of the list to make sure that you are addressing as things become more critical, if you've ignored them for a little bit.
So what is your top marketing tip? So fascinating background in the hipster cycle shops of London and moving across to Puma. But what have you kept with you in terms of marketing advice, or what have you heard recently that's really struck a chord with you that you always share with your teams and colleagues?
It isn't something that I've kept. It's something that I've learned over time as it becomes more and more important, these data-driven decisions. And for me, it's actually data-driven attribution for your return on ad spend. This is my top marketing tip, or something that I didn't think of until it was actually pointed out to me, that you can't just count on the first click and attribute all your costs there. And looking at it within the industry, you know, on average, consumers interact with your adverts, you know, somewhere between 7 to 13 clicks before they actually come to your website and then actually purchase. How are you making sure that your marketing spend is truly effective if you're only counting, you know, the first or the last click? You need to attribute the costs evenly across there to have a very good overview of exactly what is driving your marketing. And that's why I'm a big fan of data-driven attribution when it comes to marketing, or it's what I preach the most about to the teams.
So that makes total logical sense, but how do you do that?
Google Analytics helps you. Google Ads helps you. And you have to just look at it almost on a daily, weekly, break it down that way. See what is driving and using the data to then make that decision and see if it is truly a brand campaign, a unique advertising campaign that is driving the traffic, or is it a mixture of the two? You know, don't just turn one off with maybe feeding the top of the funnel, maybe feeding mid funnel, and then see how they are actually relating and what that true cost is before trying to switch one off.
And are there any other technologies outside of Google that you use? Is there anything in the startup space that you think adding a addendum to that kind of technology, or is it just pure Google through and through? That's all you need.
No, what does help me is the visualization. So a few tools like Trello or something else. In terms of the startup space, big enterprise corporations don't like those very much. They like the, oh, what's the company next door using? Let's use the same, right? That's how the procurement normally happens. You have to argue a lot. I do feel that over the years, it's become easier to argue startup technology in. There are so many out there. I actually like a few different startups more about customer journey than, sorry, we're going off the topic here, where you can actually see the data and how consumers actually interact with your main website more so than the journey to the website. I personally don't have any experience in any third-party tools that we could use in addition to Google myself today.
Today's episode is brought to you by Media for All, which was set up to help encourage more Black, Asian, and other ethnic talent into media, and to provide a support and mentoring network to ensure talent flourishes in the media industry that we all love. If you're looking for a mentor or would like to mentor young ethnic talent, check them out at mediaforall.org.uk, and it is all 100% free.
So we're at the halfway stage, loosely. So we're going to start talking about your shiny new object, which is headless e-commerce. So I'm ashamed to say that I hadn't heard of that when we discussed this the other day. So please could you introduce what headless e-commerce is for people like me who should know more?
And Tom, you don't have to be ashamed. It's just something new. It's very interesting. And I think you raised a good question, the startup space. So headless e-commerce is, actually, let me rewind a little bit. And traditional e-commerce, or what they call monolithic, is you choose a platform, whether that's Shopify, Magento, Salesforce, BigCommerce. You choose a web platform to then list your products on and sell. You have what's called a front end, and that's the main section that your consumers usually interact with. And then you have a back end, which is kind of the framework and the running of the entire site. And you've got a lot of code between the two. What headless e-commerce is you separate that consumer front end, the main part that the consumers interact with, from the back end. And you do this for a couple of different reasons. You know, think of it this way. Every time one person comes to your website, it pulls all of the code front and back end. And traditionally, this is what made websites slower. As one person came and, you know, one becomes 100 or 1,000 on there, every single one of those is pulling the code from the server and it's exposing the code to them. Whether the code from the back end is being used or not. But that then causes your websites to be slower and clunkier. By removing that, you then sort of improve the speed of your website, you know, the performance of it. But also you break away that tradition, and the boundaries that the platform then put down as to what you can do with the front end. Because then it kind of just limits you, you know. And again, I'll refer to it as sort of traditional e-commerce. A platform would dictate that your homepage has a banner at the top, above that sort of a menu. But separating the two, you could totally customize the experience that the consumers have on your website, completely different, and how they interact. And you can build a unique customer journey. If you go with traditional, what it tends to look like is homepage, consumers interact with that. If they land on your homepage, then they go to a product detail page or a listing page. From that, they then go to a quick view or to a product detail page. And, you know, it's a structured journey of how the consumer then interacts with your website. What you could do with headless e-commerce, because you're not bound to that framework anymore of the platform, you could build a unique customer journey as consumers load or come to your website, and they can interact with any way they see fit. Not only you get that personalization, or, you know, you're sort of going into some of the perks of headless now, is where you can then build that personalization and unique customer journey for your different use groups. But it also then looks at the performance of your website. And with Google Lighthouse, Google now doesn't only just rate your website anymore on the content and the SEO and the items you have it, but they actually rate your website on performance. They give it a Lighthouse score out of 100. Most websites in the world today sort of hit anywhere between 20 to 40 out of 100 on there. Amazon is up to sort of your 80s and up almost up to your 90s on any given day, as they look at this number quite frequently. But as consumers search or use Google, Google now actually add heavier weight to the performance and how your consumer is actually going to interact with that website. So again, the more speed you can give your website, or the more it can alleviate some of that heavy code pull, Google's going to rank you better, and your website will actually then be found through search engines a lot easier as well.
So you've said a unique customer journey a few times. So what are the options? What's available? Are we talking about like old school kind of flash experiences with videos and mini microsites built in? Or are you just talking about, hey, we know you like yoga, so therefore you're going to see yoga pictures?
You could serve up both of those experiences depending on your user profile. So, and let's go back a little bit. So normally you'd start off, you know, websites have the category management at the top, you know, men's, women's, sports, kids, whatever that may be, clothing versus shoes. And traditionally you had to set that up as the framework of your platform is. But now with Headless, you can actually service different tool sets. So whether that's your video content and your yoga content, and use the best tool there for it. Because with Headless, and sorry, I may have forgotten to mention this, you can actually service and use multiple applications and connect that via API to the core of the system. So why use one tool when you can use multiple tools for different experiences, and you can use the best tool? And that's some of the uniqueness or interest in Headless, is that you can then...
When you say tools, help me understand what the breadth of different tools are available and what that means for the marketer and the consumer.
So coming back to images and how they're displayed on your website, or video content, normally you would have to host that content on your website, or you could use a third-party service now where you could actually have that hosted somewhere else and plugged in and served on your Headless front end. And consumers can use and interact with that. And one that I like to think of is also maybe reviews. Predominantly, in the old days, you would have to make sure that, you know, the review tool you used, whether it's like Bizarre Voice or Power Reviews or anything, any third party, Trustpilot, anything like that, you'd have to first check the compatibility, and you'd have to do an integration with your website to host this information and serve it. What you can now do is you could serve that information how your consumer wants to see it in a personalized experience in this front end, without it touching the back end or slowing your service down. So again, you could use reviews for one. You could use a recommendation tool, AI recommendation tool like Broomreach, that's looking at the data that the consumers previously experienced or looked at or maybe interacted with your site with. And you can use that information to service them with recommendations, shop the looks, where they could then actually maybe buy a whole outfit if they were just looking at items. And you can also use that information to then personalize that shopping experience. If I know, for instance, that a consumer had come to our website last week or a month ago, and they bought a pair of running shoes, they might not want to see a new pair of running shoes knowing that they got it, but I can use that information to service and show them accessories and upsell and cross-sell as part of the recommendations. And again, I'm not tied down to one tool that I would have in the past had to integrate with my backend, but I can try multiple different tools and see what the consumer interacts with better or services a better recommendation. And I can actually move a lot faster in Headless than I could in a traditional e-commerce platform.
So all of this sounds lovely. Who wouldn't want to use Headless Ecom? Is there a dark side? or a downside? What's stopping everyone doing this now?
Yes, there is. So it's a blank canvas when you come to it. So if you're not structured, you could create a unique experience that no consumer actually wants and or needs. you could go too extreme, considering it's a blank canvas, and then consumers still have that muscle memory of interacting with the website in a certain way, you know, and they want that interaction with that ease. The second item that it is, so when it comes to design costs, because now you've separated your front end, you could also then have escalating design costs where you keep building something better all the time and you're functioning on it instead of just working on with what works and servicing that. Second to that is some of your traditional marketing items may get lost. Whereas you called it out, your new startup marketing tools may actually be easier to implement than they have in the past. But some of the more traditional ones that you may want might struggle with headless. As you said, it's the shiny new object, and it's something new that people are still trying to figure out how to use it to the best of its abilities.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there, but that sounds like a bright future for brands and consumers and creatives, to be honest. It feels like the e-commerce is going to be a lot more fun, a lot more engaging. So I'm really keen to see how that plays out. But if someone wanted to get in touch with you, Roy, and talk about this stuff, how would you want them to do that?
Reach out to me on LinkedIn. It's Roy Wenzel on LinkedIn. Search Roy Wenzel Puma. I think it's one of the only results that come up. That's the best way to reach out to me.
And what makes a killer LinkedIn outreach to you?
It's a good question. I never thought about it because everyone uses the the standard. I've read your profile. It needs to be more engaging and more interesting than the rest.
What makes it more engaging? Come on.
Oh, now I'm thinking about it because. Oh, I'm blank. It needs to be better than the "Hi, I've read your profile. I think we should connect." I think it needs to be, speed dating, 8 seconds, 400 characters, or whatever you have on the LinkedIn profile. It's just like, I'm interested in these items. This is what I can offer, or I'm also interested in some of these items that you've been talking about. Let's connect.
That's great advice. Well, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you very much, Tom.
Hi, just before you go, I'd really appreciate it if you could take the time to write a review of the Shiny New Object podcast on Apple Podcasts or iTunes, whatever it's called these days, or whichever podcast provider you use. We're an indie podcast, so it would go a long way for us if you could just share the word and give us a bit of a support on those channels. That'd just be fantastic. If you haven't got time, that's also cool. And yeah, if you could tell your colleagues about the podcast, and also, if possible, don't forget to subscribe. And I'd love to hear your feedback. If you'd like to speak on the podcast or be a guest, or you think I'm asking the wrong questions, anything, I'd be super interested to hear what you think. So please email me at tom@automatedcreative.net. That's TOM at, I'm not going to bother spelling it. Anyway, you'll work it out. Thanks so much.